This is Wednesday, November 29th. God's salvation through history. We started last week looking at the text of Joshua, the 5th chapter, verse 13, thereby going down to chapter 6 and verse 27 concerning the battle of Jericho on that. And in looking at that, they had crossed the Jordan River, and Jericho was going to be the first initial city west of the Jordan River or in the promised land that they're going to start looking at and taking in the central campaign that Joshua was doing. And Joshua had about 40,000 men prepared for battle that went to the plains of Jericho. See this in Joshua chapter 4 and verse 13. And Joshua was a small city, and it was about between 6 to 10 acres. And it had defended as far as being with walls. We see that in the second chapter of Joshua, verse 15, when the spies went and went to Rahab's house and were looking at the city before they took it, spying it out, we realized that it was defended with walls. And in the fifth chapter, in verses 13 through 15, Joshua is given encouragement by the appearing of the captain of the Lord's host, that he was giving him, saying that he wasn't for either side, more or less, but because Joshua asked him, who are you for? And he, you know, are you against us? Are you an enemy? Or are you a foe? Or working for us? And said he was with the Lord's host. And that's what he was going to be working with, the angel there. So we looked at that, and because of the children of Israel, the town was securely shut in with nobody going in and out. You had the walls, you had the gates shut, and in the 6th chapter, verse 1, it was totally shut in because of them. And they were afraid of the Israelites, the people in Jericho were, the inhabitants, because of what God had done. We found that in Joshua, again, the 2nd chapter, verses 9 through 11, of where Rahab had told them they had heard what God had done for them in Israel, with Israel in Egypt, and how they weren't ready for them. They were scared of them. They were afraid of them. So the town had the gates. They were shut to secure the city in its defense. And Joshua, we know that they did this at night also in Joshua, the 2nd chapter, verses 5 and 7, when the spies were being let out. It talked about the gates being shut at night. So the defense of a city was the high walls. The gates were shut at night, so no one could go out or come in through the darkness of, the cover of darkness. And so, therefore, it was very defensible. Joshua was given specific instructions of how to take the city, along with the sure promise from God that victory was certain in the second verse of Joshua chapter 6. So again, beforehand, God is giving the encouragement to Joshua that the victory was going to be certain for them and not the fear. He told them that the men of war of Israel were to march around the city once a day for 6 days, according to the third verse of Joshua chapter 6. There was a procession that was going to be, they were going to be going in around the city, and it was the armed men of war that were to go first, followed by the 7 priests, each with a ram's horn, followed by the Ark of the Covenant, and then the rear guard following behind the Ark. And again, the importance is somewhat on the Ark of the Covenant, that the Ark of the Covenant was significant to other people and to Israel. When they saw it, it meant to them that the presence of God was among them or with them. So they marched around the city walls, blowing the trumpets once every day for 6 days. And on the 7th day, they marched around the city 7 times. And on the 7th trip, after the blowing of the trumpets, the people were to shout because God had given them the city in verse 16 of chapter 6. So that was the signal. The people shouted. The walls fell down flat so that the city could be entered and be taken in the 20th verse of Joshua chapter 6. God had commanded that everything was to be utterly destroyed in the city except for Rahab and her family. And that's in Joshua chapter 6 and verse 23. Now God had required that the silver and gold and the vessels of brass and iron were to be consecrated or set apart unto the Lord and placed into the Lord's treasury. We find this in Joshua the 6th chapter, verses 19 and verse 24. The first city and the first conquest that they're having west of the Jordan, it's interesting to note that the items were to be consecrated to God. They were his first. Everything else was to be destroyed. Israel was not to keep any of the spoil. They were not to take any of the accursed things, being any of the other spoils of the city. We find that in verse 18. That was God's commandment. So everything, when they first enter into so-called promised land, or in the land of inheritance that they were supposed to have, God said, the first city, these items are mine. God said, these are mine. These will be consecrated, set apart to me, and be put into his treasury as far as that. And that was the gold, the vessels of brass, the silver, iron, and so forth. Anything else was accursed, and it was not to be taken. And if it was taken, then it would have been in disobedience to God's command. So that is what we left off with last week as far as the taking of Jericho. Just by having, it's been explained that you can talk to those that are engineers, that they tried to explain it away. If you get, and some of the kids have been in band and so forth to know that they won't let a marching band go across a bridge in cadence, because if they do, the cadence of their steps and so forth will cause the bridge to collapse. And there are those that try to surmise that, well, it's because of this marching around the city that they did, that in this cadence that they did, that was the reason why the walls fell. It's not. Okay? The fact is that God promised them ahead of time. He told them specifically what to do. They followed his instructions, and because of him that the walls fell. It wasn't due to the sound. It wasn't due to the blowing of the trumpets. It wasn't due to the shouting. It was due to God and his presence being there that he said this is what he was going to do. In this scenario here, the people really didn't have to fight much, because when the walls went down, they just went in and invaded the city and destroyed the people. And it really, compared to the others, it really wasn't that large of a city. But this is their first initial conquest for Joshua in the land of inheritance. And God promised him ahead of time, it's going to be yours, follow the instructions. The only one instruction that was really significant was everything in it is accursed. These are certain items to go into the Lord as his, his first part that was dedicated to him. And you aren't to take anything. And of course, we know that something was taken. And that had an effect upon the next battle that we want to look at in Joshua, the 7th chapter, in verses 1 through 12, is the battle at Ai. Ai is about 12 miles from Jericho in a northwesterly direction. So it would have been the next city that Joshua would have been looking at. And Ai and Bethel are very, very close together, with Ai being about 1.5 miles southeast of Bethel. And it's thought sometimes that Ai was a possible military outpost of Bethel, with it being over toward the east side of it, just a hair, that this was a military outpost for the city of Bethel, and that's what the purpose of Ai was. But regardless, Joshua sent men from Jericho to view Ai, and they came back with a good report in Joshua chapter 7 and verse 2. And the good report was such that it's going to be an easy place to take. Ai is going to be easy to take, and Joshua would just take 2,000 or 3,000 men, because they were going to be up against just a few people, according to verse 3. And so Joshua takes that advice, but notice that in this instance here, with the beginning of the taking of Ai, different apart from Jericho, there's nothing recorded that God said, I'm giving you this city. As he went before to Joshua before Jericho and said, this is yours, don't, go in and take it. And the cities we're going to see afterwards, even with Ai, afterwards in the second attempt, God tells him ahead of time, you go take it. This first time, God did not give his blessings. He did not approach Joshua first and say, it's given to you, go take it. Because of the sin that it took place, in that the accursed thing was taken from Jericho and the person had it. And that's why God didn't say, okay, you're going to have the city. He did, no mention of God. He's silent on it. God didn't reveal to Joshua the success of it. And ultimately what happens is when Israel goes in with these few people and they're kind of overconfident in thinking that, well, you know, we're going to take this. Jericho was pretty easy. We did all right with this. This is going to be a whole lot easier. Ai is fewer people. You know, this ought to be a breeze. They go in and they're defeated, and the men of Israel flee from the men of Ai. In verse 4 of Joshua chapter 7. And in this, with this first defeat in the second city that they go to, Israel is devastated and they're very distraught over the loss when you look at verse 5. And it's the point that Joshua is really downcast that the men are defeated and Israel is defeated. And him and the elders of Israel are prostrate before the ark of the Lord until evening in the morning over this as far as what has happened. And again, the significance you see of the Ark of the Covenant. That they recognized that the presence of God was associated with that. That's where they were prostrating themselves before the Ark of the Covenant in their mourning before Jehovah. And Joshua begins to waver, and he states that, you know, Lord, it would have been better if he and the people had stayed on the other side of the Jordan. Would have been better. We've heard that type of thinking before with the children of Israel in the wilderness when they said it would have been better for us to stay in Egypt where we had everything made. Here, Joshua wavers to an extent and the people that it would have been better if we stayed on the other side of Jordan than to have suffered this defeat. And that's in verse 7 of chapter 7. And so the Lord gets a little strong with Joshua. He rebukes Joshua and he tells him to get up and to quit mourning over it, that Israel has sinned. And it's interesting that he says Israel has sinned in the covenant which he commanded them and have even taken of the cursed thing of Jericho. Joshua chapter 7, verses 10 and 11. I don't think that the covenant can just be limited to God saying, I'm going to give you Jericho. I think the covenant could be extended even further, and this is open to review, in looking at it, that the covenant that he made with them was that I'm going to give you this land. If you remember the nations that he said, I'm going to give you this land, only they were to do what? They were to obey God. And if they didn't, you know, obey God, that the angel was going to be against them. So that was the covenant, more or less, to me, in a broader sense, is that if you don't obey, then God said, I'm not going to be with you. And so here he tells them that they have sinned in the covenant, which he had commanded them, and they have even taken of the accursed thing of Jericho. And the accursed thing was something that should have been dedicated to God or destroyed, one or the other, but it was taken. And we know that the people lost the battle because God was against them and that he would not be with them anymore if it was not corrected. And he was firm in that. In the 12th verse of chapter 7, he tells them, you know, I'm against you. I'm not going to go with you anymore. That's the reason why you lost the battle. And this is where I'm stopping if it's not corrected. And so we know from that standpoint, then the scripture goes into where it's something that has happened that there's only, I know, recorded to us that we can surmise is that only two people know what happened. And that is God knew what happened and Achan knew what happened. Achan took the thing. There were several things that he took. The Babylonian garment and other things that he took and he hid. And he knew about it and God knew about it. So we have to bear in mind that, you know, all in all, no matter what the situation is, no matter what comes about, no matter what happens, there's one person that always knows, and that's God. God knows about it no matter what. He knows what's happened. He knows what's took place. No matter what Achan could have said, no matter how Achan could have tried to divert it or whatever, God knew exactly what happened in the time that it happened. No matter what anybody else would try to say. And that's some consolation for us, is that no matter what happens, We know what happened, and God knows. And with that, that's where we have to draw our peace from, is that we know what took place, and God knows, and that's all that matters. Achan was found out, not by Joshua or others, because it was through the process of God that God brought these families forth and so forth, that Achan was found to be the one that had committed the trespass. And Achan paid the penalty for it. And the situation was corrected. So then after that situation is corrected, and then when you go to Joshua chapter 8, verses 1 through 29, you have the second battle against Ai. And it's different in this, in that after the problem is taken care of the sin of Achan, the Lord then tells Joshua that Ai will be given to him in battle in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 8, which is different. He didn't mention that in chapter 7 when they first went up. But here, God tells him now, you are doing what is right. You did what was right. You took care of the problem. I'm going to give it to you. This time, Joshua takes 30,000 men with him, according to verse 3. Far cry different from before. And Joshua sends a force of 5,000 men of valor to wait on the west side of the city between Bethel and Ai. And again, remember that the distance is about 1.5 miles between Bethel and Ai. So these men are hiding in there between Bethel and Ai for an ambush at Joshua's signal, whenever he sends a signal, in verses 9 and 12. Joshua and the rest of the people go to the north side of the city, and they encamp on the other side of a valley against Ai, according to verse 11. And they're there overnight. And in the morning, the battle is made ready, and Joshua and his group feign retreat again with his people after they start to try to skirmish. And the king of Ai with his people, they pursue after Joshua like they did the first time and had great success. And they left the city, and even those of Bethel, which is 1.5 miles away, joined in. So now you've got the two cities kind of open, Ai and Bethel. And those people join in. And verses 15 through 17, so they all leave the city saying, well, you know, we did this the first time. They're running away again. Let's go. You know, we're going to have them. So they pursue them out. And again, it wasn't just left up to Joshua. You see the Lord involved in this, in that the Lord tells Joshua to stretch out his spear in his hand toward Ai, because God had given it to him. So again, you have the significance of a spear, and the Lord telling him, you stretch it out, it would be that. And so the ambush force that Joshua had put over there, they attack when he stretches out his spear, and they take the city and they set it on fire as God commanded. God had commanded them to set Ai on fire in verses 18 and 19 and verse 8 of Joshua chapter 8. So the men, the ambush group, goes in. And they take the city, they set it on fire, and the group that's out, the men of Ai and Bethel that are out there, they're caught out there, and they turn around, they see the city going up in flames. They see the smoke and so forth. And so they realize, you know, something's happened, not for the good. And so they turn around and start to go back toward Ai. And as they do, the men, the ambush team that is in Ai, go out toward where the men of Ai are, and so now they're caught in the middle between Joshua and his group and the ambush group of Joshua, and the men of Ai are caught in that ambush, and they're slain along with the women, and it's being about 12,000, according to verse 25. So in this instance here, after this battle that God had gave them and the destruction that they did, God did allow, in the taking of Ai, for Israel to take of the cattle and the spoil for themselves. So the first set in Jericho was dedicated to God, and rightly so. You can do a study through the Old Testament and see the things that were first dedicated to God. And it was no different here. As soon as they went into the inheritance land, that first spoil was dedicated to God. But now when they go in and go against Ai, God tells them in verse 2 and in verse 27, they're allowed to take the cattle and the spoil for themselves. So we see God working here in His deliverance, that at the first time that there was a problem, that there was sin that occurred, and they had transgressed, that all of Israel suffered, and that Ai defeated Israel. And then after it was corrected, then Joshua was told by God that He would allow them to take the city. And so He did by the force of the ambush and so forth. Bear in mind that Joshua received instruction from God, so they're learning in their fighting intelligence how to fight and so forth, and they're getting stronger in that. But also it's the encouragement that they're getting from God, that God is fighting for them. And in these we can see that God is fighting for them, and God receives the glory for that. And that's the whole purpose of God's salvation, as you study through their history, is that God is to have the glory for what happens, because He's the one that's in control. So that's the battle of Ai there in Joshua 8. So now, as he's working in that campaign, you go to the battle of the five kings against Gibeon in Joshua the 10th chapter and verses 1 through 27. The five kings of the Amorites, we are told, were the kings of Jerusalem, Hebron, Jarmuth, Lachish, and Eglon in verse 5 of chapter 10. And these are the five Amorite kings. And the king of Jerusalem, he had heard how Joshua had taken Jericho and Ai, and how he had destroyed the kings, and he made a league with those of Gibeon in the 10th chapter in verse 1. And he greatly feared, because Gibeon was a great city, the men were mighty in Gibeon, that he requested help from the other kings to come up against Gibeon. If you remember, Gibeon made a league with Joshua and them. And so these five Amorite kings are kind of concerned that Joshua's coming in. Already two cities have failed, three cities have failed. The kings have been destroyed. And now he's made a league with Gibeon. If you remember, it wasn't a league that they should have entered into, but they did through deception. And so now the five Amorite kings are fearing, because Gibeon is close to where they're at. And it was a great city, and they were mighty fighting people. And so he requests help from the other kings to come up against Gibeon in verses 3 and 4. The five kings of the Amorites, they come up against Gibeon, and they make war with it in verse 5. And the men of Gibeon, of course, since they made a league, they send to Joshua and say, remember, we made a league. You need to come help defend us. And he's camped at Gilgal, and they ask him to come and help his servants, them being of Gibeon, they are his servants, against the five kings in verse 6. Now, Gilgal is about 15 miles northeast of Gibeon. And so in this, God tells Joshua ahead of time to not fear, because God has delivered them into Joshua's hand, and they would not be able to stand against Joshua in verse 8. So even before he starts progressing to go do the fight and so forth, God has already encouraged him and told him, you know, it's going to be given into your hands, not by what you do, but by what God's going to do. And it would be given. So Joshua marches the 15 miles at night to come to Gibeon. Verse 9 of chapter 10. And in this, if you get a map, you can look at all these places in this campaign, that the battle takes place over 35 to 38 miles from Gibeon unto Makkedah in verses 10 of chapter 10. And it's a great distance when you've got to consider that they would be doing this fighting and so forth. So Joshua comes at night, marches all night long, gets there to help with Gibeon, and so then they start their skirmishes. The distance from Beth Horan to Azekah is about 20 miles. And in that battle, the scripture records that God cast down great hailstones upon the enemy, and that those that died from the hailstones were more than those who died by the sword in verse 11. Now, how great these hailstones were, I don't know. It doesn't record. It was enough that for the distance of the miles, when you look at the two cities, there's 20 miles of nothing but hailstones coming down that's destroying the enemy. And that, God is using a force of nature, because this was out of the ordinary. These great hailstones that were being used by God to destroy them. The city of Ajalon is about 12 miles due west of Gibeon. And this is where Joshua makes his request to God in the sight of Israel, so that they would see it, that the sun stand still upon Gibeon and the moon stand still in the valley of Ajalon. In verse 12. The sun rises up from where? The sun rises up from the east. The moon is going down in the west. And that's the way you have the two cities. You have Gibeon over here, where the sun will be coming out. You have the valley of Ajalon over here in the west, where the moon would be going down. And his request was, the sun stand still in Gibeon, and the moon stand still in the valley of Ajalon. Now, with that being the case, we can surmise that the time of day would not have been in the evening, because the moon doesn't go from the west to the east, and neither does the sun do the opposite. So this had to be in the morning when he's making this request to keep the sun in Gibeon as it's coming up in the east, and as the moon's going down in the west in the valley of Ajalon, to keep it there. Okay? So the Lord honored that prayer of Joshua, and Joshua wanted that prayer so that he could defeat through all these battles of these various cities. There's a lot of cities there. If you remember, there's five kings that are fighting with the king of Jerusalem there. There's five in all of the Amorite kings that are fighting, which takes in a lot of cities down through there. So the Lord honors that prayer of Joshua. And the sun stood still in the midst of the heaven, hasting not to go down about a whole day for Joshua to do the battle. In verses 12 through 13. We are told of the uniqueness of that day when God hearkened to the voice of man, because God fought for Israel in verse 14. So again, we're told that the fighting and the reason for the success was that God was fighting for Israel. The astounding nature of that day, when you look at it, is that God used the forces of nature and his set laws of nature to be altered to benefit Israel in answer to Joshua's prayer. Great hailstones and the stopping of the sun's movement took place. And in that, if you can imagine, that's why it's said that there's never been a day before that or a day after that that God has hearkened to a man's prayer, because when you start interfering with the direct laws that God set in place, he's only done that once that I'm aware of. I could be, I may be wrong. If you know of another instance where he interfered with the laws like that of the gravitational process and everything else, because if you just stop the rotation of the earth, things are going to happen. It's going to be out of balance. And that's what God did. He stopped in his way that the sun stood still. The circuit of the earth had to stop, because the sun doesn't do the revolving. It's the earth that does the revolving. It had to stop for the sun to stay there for a whole day and the moon to stay there so that Joshua could complete the battle.
What about when Hezekiah, when the dial went back 10 degrees?
That could be.
It wasn't near significant as a whole day, but it was just for a short period of time
where he took the time back. There has been, even I think in the scientific realm of things, it used to be mentioned and went around that there was a day that was lost in man's accounting of time, and it's referred to as being this day. Now, there's many different thoughts on this, and you just have to arrive. There's some saying that, that it was just got cloudy, and so therefore the sun standing still meant that so that it wouldn't be so hot and repressive for the troops of Joshua that it was overcast so that they could be successful. But that's not what the scripture says. It says it stood still, and it stood still for about a whole day. So he hearkened unto man's prayer to stop that. Now, on that with Hezekiah made a request, and he hearkened unto that too. So you're all right. There's another one there. The sun had to go back by, 15 degrees? The sun had to go back. So he had to alter that to go back. But when you think about the magnitude of the request that Joshua, even after being told, well, you're going to win and everything, but then still the request and the confidence in that request that God would answer it, you know, that's amazing. And sometimes when we make requests to God, we seem to think, well, we can't go to those extremes, but God heard Joshua to that extreme. So the five kings, Joshua has the victory there. The five kings fled to a cave at Megiddo, and they were sealed in it by great stones until Joshua had slain all the enemy, verses 17 through 21. And he had the five kings brought out of the sealed cave, and the captains of Israel, Joshua told them to put their feet upon the necks of the five kings in verses 23 and 24. And the reason he tells them that, he tells them to do that and not to fear or be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage, for God shall do thus to all your enemies whom you fight against. In verse 25. So God is again saying, I'm due the glory and honor because this is what's going to happen to all your enemies, and it's going to be attributed to God. So that is the battle there of the five Amorite kings and how the Lord played his part in that salvation. So appreciate it. Yeah.